Hello and welcome back to Kerrang! Back Issues. This week we will be looking at issue number 483, February the 26th, 1994, £1.40. As always, you can get in contact with us if you want. You can get us through Twitter at KerrangPod, or you can send us an email at KerrangBackIssues@gmail.com. If you were someone that ever saw the Mental Helicopters, I'd love to hear from you. If you want to talk to me about Ben Shepherd from last week's episode, Ben Shepherd from Soundgarden, that is, and why he is an absolute knob, then of course get in touch, tell me what you think. The cover stars for this week's issue are Bon Jovi, and the cover says Party Metal is Dead, Bon Jovi new LP exclusive. Also Pantera for Donington, Vi to join Ozzy, Writing, Riffing, Rocking, the almighty studio exclusive, and there is an 8-page poster pullout of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Also, Soundgarden, have they made the album of 94? Well, let's hope that Kim Thal, Matt Cameron and Chris Cornell have made the album of 94, and Ben Shepherd has no mention in this episode. Issue episode. Alright, moving on. Starting where we always start, every week, same every week, not going to change until Kerrang! Does something like change up his entire format. Mayhem, the hottest news in metal first. Ozzy, Vi to fill Zach's boots. Ozzy Osbourne is lining up guitar hero Steve Vai for a possible collaboration on the next Ozzy album. The pair were spotted in deep discussion backstage at the Birmingham NEC last December when the guitarist band Project Vi was supporting Aerosmith. Ozzy's guitarist of the past 5 years, Zakk Wylde, is currently recording an album for Geffen with a new band and is therefore unable to devote all his time and energy to the Ozzy album. Steve Vai would obviously be a more than ample replacement for Zakk. Vai has already worked with such hard rock giants as David Lee Roth and David Coverdale's Whitesnake. Stop Press now and Soundgarden are to launch their new album with a super unknown secret gig on March the 12th. The venue for the show, which precedes the Seattle Stars' forthcoming UK tour by 4 weeks, is somewhere in London. Rollins Band have announced a full UK tour to tie in with the release of their forthcoming album, Wait. Away from touring and recording commitments, heavyweight frontman Henry Rollins has recently co-starred with Charlie Sheen in a new film entitled The Chase, and is also set to appear in another with heartthrob Keanu Reeves. Danzig, the LA-based gothic hard rockers, have finally cracked the states with a live version of their 1988 classic Mother. Released as a single and lifted from the band's latest Thrall Demon Sweat Live EP, Mother 93 has seen enormous success at all the major American radio stations and is currently at number 52 in the US charts and climbing. The success of Mother 93 is yet another example of the enormous power and influence wielded by MTV, who, having previously ignored equally strong Danzig songs and videos, decided to place the live video for Mother 93 into their Buzz Clip category. This is the same category that helped Faith No More's Epic smash the US market in 1989. Due to earthquake damage sustained to his house, frontman Glenn Danzig was too busy to talk about his recent surge of popularity. But in a conversation with Kerrang! Last year, he was clear on what he thought about success. "Let's get something straight," he said. "There's nothing wrong with mass marketing. It's when you change what you do so you can be mass marketed. That's wrong." Pantera for Donington? I feel like a lot of Kerrang's news in 1994 up until Donington, well, until the full lineup is announced, is all of these possible rumours of who could play, who couldn't play. I know, we know. The Pantera did eventually play Donington. Anyway, let's read this. Pantera have emerged as strong contenders for a place on the bill at the Donington Monsters of Rock Festival. The crushing Texan power metalers entered the frame the same day that festival organisers announced that they were poised to confirm a headline act for the event. A second band is also expected to be secured this week. Organisers MCP were keeping their cards close to their chest as they spoke to Mayhem this week, but did say that an announcement was imminent. Tickets, according to an official spokesman, could be on sale within a week. Aerosmith have been strong favourites to headline the festival from as long ago as late last year, and Motley Crue, who return to the scene with a powerful new album titled Simply Motley Crue next month, appear serious contenders for the coveted special guest slot. Pantera, whose ferocious new album Far Beyond Driven is unleashed in March, would help make this prospective top three a phenomenal lineup. Aerosmith, Motley Crue and Pantera would indeed be a very strong lineup, said the MCP spokesman, and one which we would no doubt like to put together at some time. All I can say at the moment is that we will be putting together a terrific package. Last year, Donington didn't go ahead because we couldn't get together a good package. We need bands of a certain calibre. This year, we can. Of the much talked about new talent stage, the spokesman is similarly non-committal. We are certainly looking at the option, as it would enhance the festival and also mean we could put on more bands. But the sheer cost of a second stage is something that has to be addressed. The new talent stage is far from a certainty. Meanwhile, Pantera returned to active service with a crushing new single on March the 7th, entitled I'm Broken. The record produced by the band and longtime collaborator Terry Date is backed on all formats, bar 12-inch, with Slaughtered. Both tracks are lifted from the band's brutal new album, which is released through East West on March 21st. Nirvana have added two more dates to their forthcoming UK tour. They now play Brixton Academy April 5th and 6th, on top of their two previously announced dates at the same venue on April 3rd and 4th, which have both now sold out. Nirvana are currently courting controversy sparked by the release of recent single Rape Me, which is believed to have upset the National Rape Crisis Organisation. A substantial cash donation said to have been offered by the Seattle Free Peace in an attempt at reconciliation is reported to have been turned down. Ice-T, the controversial US rap star who hit the UK in December with his metal project band Body Count, releases a new book in May. Entitled The Ice Opinion, it is already available in the States and is currently being backed up with a lecture tour of US colleges. There are no plans to extend the tour to the UK at present. The book, which centres around Ice's involvement with LA gang warfare, is a typically direct affair and mirrors feelings expressed by Ice-T in his forthcoming rap single, Got A Lot Of Love, out through Virgin on March 24th. The Ice Opinion is published by Pam McMillan and will retail at £9.99. Tour news now, and Noisy Mothers, the country's leading rock TV show, is to undertake a Metalmongous promotion tour in the coming weeks. Show presenter Crusher will be taking his cosmic couch to Nottingham Rock City March 11th, Birmingham XL's 12th, London Astoria 13th, Norwich Samantha's 17th, Glasgow Cat House 18th, Bristol Beer Keller 22nd, Leicester University 26th, Wolverhampton Cage April 2nd, and Sheffield Roxy's the 4th. The London and Nottingham dates coincide with live shows by New York boogie merchants Raging Slab, with Poor and Head Swim added to the London bill. Various giveaways and prizes will be slung your way each night. Understand, the hotly tipped South End Straight Edges have been confirmed as support to Clawfinger on the first half of the Swedish rap metal's forthcoming UK tour. Understand, who have recently signed to East West Record to play from February the 23rd to March the 5th inclusive. A support for the remainder of the tour has yet to be confirmed. Hard rock bands are being sought for a new metal night at the Full Moon Eclipse Pub in Essex. Interested parties should send tapes and details to Alan Holloway at Full Moon Eclipse, Stoketcroft, Bristol, or take a tape along to any Thursday rock night. Mental Helicopters. I feel like Mental Helicopters might need a bit of theme music because I do seem to mention them every week. Anyway, Mental Helicopters, the hard gigging Surrey Nutters play Leicester Rock House February the 25th, Oldham Shack 26th, Milton Keynes Schoolhouse March the 5th, London West Kensington Orange on the 10th, Sheffield Hind 18th, Dinnington Squirrel on the 19th, Hastings Carlisle 25th, the Tony Pandy Royal Naval Club April 9th, and the Norwich Oval on the 23rd. To get your name added to the band's free mailing list, write to them via Pablo Videla at 315 Kingston Road, New Malden, Surrey, KT3-3RY. Mental. And finally for tour news this week, Slightly Miffed played the London Marquee on March the 16th. Record releases now, and Aerosmith, the Boston superstars, currently winning an army of new fans thanks to copious exposure in the Wayne's World 2 film, have netted two awards at the American Music Awards. The US rockers came up trumps in both the pop rock and heavy metal categories, voted favourite band in each section by members of the US public. Don't know how that's a record release, but there we go. Dearly Beheaded have a number of long sleeve shirts, as worn by Sepultura's Andreas Kisser on The Word. They're available at £8 inclusive. They also have a demo on sale for £3 and can be contacted via Tim Preston at Low Meadow, Pendleton, Clitheroe, Lancashire, BB7, 1PT. Checks payable to Tim Preston. The band can be seen live at Stockport Monroe's March the 2nd. Pungent Stench. The Austrian Sickos released their third album, Club Mondo Bazaar, for members only, through Nuclear Blast on March the 14th. The LP features the following tracks: True Life, Kleister Boggy, Choked Just for a Joke, Hydrocephalus, I'm a Family Man, Treatments of Pain, In Search of the Perfect Torture, Practice Suicide, Fuck Bazaar, Rape Pager Con La Misma Moneda. Ash, the fresh young pop punksters from Belfast, released their debut single, Jack Names the Planet, through La La Land Recordings this week. We now come to a Mayhem special, Almighty Creation. Brit metal terrors The Almighty are hard at work on a new album, and Ray Zell is with them every step of the way. In an exclusive new Big K series, we follow The Almighty throughout the making of a major metal album, from writing to release date. In part one, Zell gate crashes rehearsals and finds the band in defiant mood, ready to crank it up. The most exciting thing on this page is the advert underneath this Almighty news piece, which says, "Heavier than hell and coming your way soon. It's Ultra Kill." And that's it. That's the advert. It's brilliant. I'm not going to lie. This is not interesting at all. I'll give you some snippets to show you how uninteresting it is. Have you a tentative album title? Ricky, maybe. And maybe not. Do you ever form songs around a good title? Yeah, all the time. It usually starts with something somebody said or read. Is there a producer penciled in to help deliver the third studio album? We've got a few people in mind, Ricky replies. That's it. I'm not reading anymore. Utter drivel.
Beavis, you've never been to a concert in your life.
Shut up!
Concerts now, and from one piece of utter drivel, which was that Almighty thing, to another piece of Almighty drivel, which is this review for Nirvana Live in Paris on Monday, February the 14th, Nirvana and the Buzzcocks. This review gets a static, which is a 3 out of 5. I will read the review first, and then I will give you my opinion on the review. Okay, let us begin, shall we? Lovely. The first French kid through La Zenith's turnstiles holds his ticket in the air as he jogs across the car park shouting for Les Buzzcocks. Europe is in love with New Wave. Anything from the Motors to Altered Images, with the possible exception of Toya, too Europop even for Europe, Les Buzzcocks were invited onto this European leg of a world tour by Nirvana themselves, and the influence is obvious. There's this bloke in the pub who always plays Ever Fallen in Love on the jukebox. It's the one Buzzcocks song which can accurately be described as a classic. Pete Shelley may be rounder in physique these days, but when he pulls that song out of his suitcase, La Zenith goes berserk. As a crowd buster, it's a masterstroke, and it's Valentine's Day in Paris with snow underfoot. Sigh. The band don't sound like they used to support the Sex Pistols back in 76. Even the new material, particularly Do It, sounds as contemporary as, say, the Wild Hearts. From a distance, they are as garish as the Manics, with twice the songs and none of the pretension. A slideshow has been knocked up on the cheap, adding a bizarre dimension to a straightforward delivery of unfussy buzz pop. Orgasmatic closes the 40-minute set, history is repeated, pop lives, and Shelley knows that we're all just soppy old tarts for 3 chords and a Mancunian accent. A large advertising screen descends in a particularly cynical ploy. A soft drinks company has aligned itself with Jimi Hendrix. This, to precede a band who are supposed to have broken the rules and reshaped the mould of arena rock, Nirvana have actually done nothing of the sort. It's a safe and conventional performance. People seem afraid to doubt Nirvana. After all, 8,000 people in one city alone can't be wrong. Sure they can. If Nirvana really are the new statesmen, then they wouldn't have had to cancel a second planned show, and back home, Pearl Jam's Versus album would not have outsold In Utero by about 2-1. Captain Kirk Cardigan is undoubtedly a world-class songwriter, full stop. But Nirvana are simply not a competitive live band. In fact, this agony opera is as unsatisfying as the can of cola that wants to be Hendrix. Here we are now, entertain us indeed. The loudest roars of adulation are reserved for the songs from Nevermind. This is particularly understandable because despite the media's knee-jerk hysteria, In Utero was largely bollocks and so was Bleach. In a live arena setting such as this, Kurt's little anti-star routine makes feeble entertainment. Nobody wants to see Nirvana dressed as sperm or emerging tap style from pods or flying by wires or battling robot dragons. Yet a band who can look this bored, sound so tame and still satisfy their public are surely skating on thin ice. It's a greatest hit show, and Smells Like Teen Spirit arrives earlier than expected. So do Lithium and Polly and Come As You Are and all the rest. They are great songs, brilliantly constructed and deftly executed. A song as strong as Rape Me can send shivers to the coldest heart, just as Kurt's acoustic encore with a female cellist smacks of a band trying to punch their way out of the mainstream paper bag. But the real star of Nirvana is Dave Grohl. When a drummer upstages a singer, then a band has a problem. Nirvana are a pop machine. Certainly not as cheesy as Meatloaf, but at least on par with Faith No More. Tonight, Le Bizcocks were everything. Grunge never was and never will be. Never mind. And that review is by Chris Watts. My opinion on this, he says that In Utero and Bleach are bollocks. That is actually incorrect. Those records are incredible, so I don't know what he's talking about there. I can possibly understand in 94 the reaction to grunge, because it's been in the mainstream for what, 2 or 3 years now, maybe 4 years. Everyone's doing it. It's oversaturated. Sure, I understand that. But see, like, to give 3 out of 5 to Nirvana, like the idea of seeing Nirvana for me is I never saw that band. So looking at this through 2021 eyes, I would give so much money to see Nirvana put in a half-assed performance, especially when we know that Kurt Cobain in 94 was having a horrific time, mental health, you know, depression, everything, drug addictions, you know, what eventually led to his suicide. Even watching Nirvana now, phone a gig in, would be better than, I would say, 95% of bands that you could see today. Obviously, that's contextualized in 2021, 1994. This is Chris Watts' review, and that's what he goes with. But yeah, looking at it from a later point, I'm a bit, I don't know. This review kind of rubbed me up the wrong way. Anyway, moving swiftly onwards. The next review is Black Sabbath and Motorhead live at the Roseland, New York on Tuesday, February the 15th. And this review is by Don K. This review gets, hang on a minute, just seeing what the concert quota is, as I've forgotten. This review gets High Voltage, which is a 4 out of 5. Motorhead are Motorhead. The machine just keeps rolling along, and according to Kerrang scribe Gordon Goldstein, Lemmy is the Clint Eastwood of rock. Carved from granite, he just stands at the mic like he was born to be there, and nothing's going to bring him down. Motorhead's decline into perennial opening act does not obscure the fact that they're playing extremely well just now. Bursting out with I'm So Bad, the usual liquefied concrete sound is distinct and powerful. Wurzel and Wizzo are sturdy, straightforward guitarists, adding the occasional flash of indulgence to a tight, no-nonsense ensemble. Drummer Mehi D is the best thing to happen to Motorhead in a long time, propelling the band with his crackling, explosive playing, and the Lempster sounding great, looking like rock and roll, seemingly having more fun than on the last US tour. The setlist favours too much new material, but the closing triple punch of Killed by Death, Overkill and Ace of Spades rouses the packed house. Yes, packed for Black Sabbath, who are experiencing a mild revival on the heels of last year's reunion hysteria and a more concerted push for their new cross-purposes slab. When they take the stage with Time Machine, the audience roar like it's the original foursome up there. It's not, but this is the best Sabbath have been for a while. The biggest surprise is the setlist. Wisely, the band have ditched the set they've been playing with few alterations for the past 15 years. Instead, tonight's 15 songs leapfrogs through various eras of the Sab's history, resurrecting some gems and putting some others to rest. War Pigs in Heaven and Hell are barely missed when singer Tony Martin does the harmonica intro to The Wizard, not played in maybe 16 years. Into the Void and Symptom of the Universe are welcome additions too. The former is one of the 5 greatest metal tunes of all time, and even though Martin has trouble singing the latter, it's still powerful proto-thrash. Tony Martin is still a fine singer and much improved as a live performer. He's still not the most dynamic frontman around, but he's looser, more communicative with the crowd, and more alive than on the Headless Cross tour. He has fun now, and seems just as excited about the old songs as the fans. The whole band seems to be re-inspired. Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler smile and look like they're having a much better time now than on the Dehumanizer trek of 92. 3 new songs are featured and politely received, while Children of the Sea remains implacably 3rd in the set. Paranoid predictably rounds things off, but halfway through the encore of Iron Man, the band bring the house down by introducing Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, a song Iommi says was only performed live once until this tour. Sure, Martin scratches it out 2 octaves lower than the original, but who cares? Black Sabbath are better than they've been in years, and I'm in heavy metal heaven. Next review is for Lagwagon at the Camden Dublin Castle on London, in London, on Wednesday, February the 16th. A excuse me, sorry, this review gets a 3 out of 5. 3 out of 5 being, flicking back again, sorry. sorry, I'm unprofessional. 3 out of 5 is static. Static out of 5. A 7-foot giant in surf shorts and a short vocalist who looks as if he's just divested himself of the prison uniform. You can't say that Lagwagon don't look interesting. That's if you can see them in the 200-mile-an-hour blur of their hardcore sonics. Hearing tracks like Island of Shame and Bury the Hatchet, it's like being back in 1988 when Snuff were kings and Senseless Things still had spots. Lagwagon aren't in that league. It's more the Dickies than NoFX or Dag Nasty, but their exuberance is enough to put a grin on the face of the faithful as the 2-minute free chord bursts tumble on top of each other. The band seem oddly bloated and would be better slimmed down to a quartet, but the choppy guitars and stroppy rhythms are infectious, like watching a punk banana split. No Balloon has a class riff which almost bursts the ceiling. It ain't going to change history, but let's hope that Lagwagon never learn that fourth chord. It'd spoil everything. Review by Claire Dowse. Gonna get it together, my bell. Like my bell, I got the ill communication. My bell, got the ill communication. Communication now, and it's that time of the week where we find out who or what has been shitting on the cornflakes of Kerrang readers this week. Let's begin. Letter of the week. Could you tell me what the hell has happened to Queensryche? For the last year, there hasn't been one single bloody mention of them in your superb mag. Have they finished recording their new album, as it has been over 3 years since Empire? Are they planning to tour? Or have they all died and everybody missed it? Please put me out of my misery, as life without Jeff Tate is getting increasingly difficult. Paula Jenkins, Diffed. And editor Phil Alexander says, The Reich are currently recording in the studio, but rest assured that there will be news in Mayhem as soon as we have it. Meanwhile, here's a picture of them. That makes up for it. A picture of them in the magazine. And a Kerrang cat to keep your mind at rest. This next letter is titled, Is Ben Sheepish? Well, Ben Shepherd, are you happy now? Are you pleased with yourself? I'm referring to your quotes in issue 481. How downright disgusting your attitude is. I usually kick girls like that or spit on them. Listen, Shepherd, you're either totally stressed out or a real woman hater. Do you really class us all as stupid bitches? Who the hell do you think you are? You spit on people. How tough of you. Just remember that the wheels turn and you'll pay for it one day. Get a life, you sad fucker. Someone upset to read such hatred in Kerrang. It's funny, you know. I thought that these nice people who go along to review gigs were actually there to listen to the music. Obviously not in the case of Chris Watts and his attempt to review Machine at the Marquee, issue 481. I don't think he mentioned the music once. That's a pity, because if he'd opened his ears, he'd have heard a bloody good band. And if Machine are, as Watts suggests, simply a slick pool of nothing, then I'm certainly enjoying swimming in it. Joanne from Warrington. Gagging for a shagging. Could you give me a picture of a certain couple of gorgeous men known as Ricky Rocket and Brett Michaels from the Society for Rooting Out Gorgeous Headbangers? The editor says, no sooner said than done, here's the delicious pouting duo for you to enjoy. For those of you who are totally disillusioned with the lack of support for unsigned bands in this country, check out the Old Bell in Swindon. Never have we come across a venue so well organised, so friendly and so dedicated to ensuring the enjoyment of the band and the crowd. Their attitude is refreshing and reassuring. We'd like to offer a huge vote of thanks to all at the Old Bell for making our gig there one of the most enjoyable ever. And if you're in the area, go and support the regular Sunday Rock Night. You're guaranteed a great evening. From Warp Spasm, Leicester. I've just been listening to Marillion's latest record and I would like to thank you guys for putting out such a wonderful album. Paul Elliott gave it 5Ks and it's well deserved. I, like many people, was very pissed off when Fish left the band and thought that was the end of them. But when they put Easter out, it seemed a fine record. Holidays in Eden was disappointing, but Brave is just fantastic from start to finish. Thierry from Marston. Short and curlies now. The Word. Crap show. Sepultura. Fucking great group. They at last made it worth watching. That's from Terry Christian's Left Bollock from Alsager. Phantom Blue fucking rock. These girls are definitely built to perform in more ways than one. See you in London. From Rocky, East Preston. This letter is titled Warcry, and it begins M, magnificent, A, amazing, N, nonpareiled, O, overwhelming, W, world conquering, A, awe-inspiring, R, revelatory, Thanks to Joey, Eric, David and Rhino for the most superb night of real metal in Milton Keynes on February the 5th. Maybe the speakers didn't explode, but the hundreds of Manowar fans did. And what an unbelievable time we had. No perfect music, a fantastic atmosphere and the incredible experience of meeting the band after the gig. Hail Manowar, you rule the universe. If you missed the gig of the century so far at Milton Keynes, don't miss them at the Marquee. From Damien, Saffron, Sue and Dave from Southwold.
Ill communication.
We now come to the Red Hot Chili Peppers 8-page poster pullout, and there are no posters in here. I think I probably gave the posters to my brother, who was definitely a bigger fan of the Red Hot Chili Peppers than me. There's a little bit of writing about the song Give It Away, filling rock dance floors in 94, and saying that it came from the 91 album Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and a small profile on new guitarist Dave Navarro. But all they talk about really is all of the guitarists that came before him. So not really that much to say. Let's move on to singles. Singles this week are reviewed by Morat. And Kerrang says, not he says, removing his helmet so that he can give his horns a polish off. His satanic majesty Morat strides on cloven hoof to the Kerrang headquarters for a gander at this week's new 45s. And believe us, it ain't a pretty sight. First single reviewed is Motley Crue's Hooligan's Holiday on Elektra. When someone, who shall remain nameless, suggested that the new Crue sound was akin to that of the Exploited, I was briefly concerned. But thankfully, they still sound like the pathetic cock rockers who have inflicted so much puerile drivel on us. So, with much glee, I can continue hating them and the ground they stand on. Good title, though. Ah, I've admitted liking something to do with Motley Crue. Forgive me, Satan, for I have sinned. Skin with their single House of Love on Parlophone. You can't knock this, it's got a great sound, it sounds like Kiss, opines Kerrang editor Phil Alexander, thus proving he's finally gone round the twist, for this is utter rubbish designed for housewives who think Bryan Adams can rock out. He can't, and neither can Skin. What's the better end that they put out a live album called Skin 'Em Alive? Sound advice. Curb Dog with their single Dry Riser EP on Vertigo. I have to confess that I haven't really paid much attention to Curb Dog before now. Nice chaps, okay noise and all that, but this is really rather special. With the right blend of thumping noise and intelligent tune to hold your attention throughout. Still a touch commercial for my warped tastes, but the dog definitely has a bark, if not a bite. Tool with their single Prison Sex on RCA. Despite the fact that vocalist Maynard James Keenan cavorts about in a testicle pink romper suit, Tool really are an awesome band. That said, Prison Sex is perhaps too subtle to be a single track. Unless it might just get lost on the radio, but they're not exactly Radio 1 fodder, and you should have bought their album Undertow long ago. The single of the week this week is by a band called Bum, with their single Mrs. Rock and Roll on One Louder Records. A lovely little ditty that either the Wild Hearts or the Ramones will be proud to put their names to. You know, the sort of thing. Three chords, loads of harmonies, and a bottom-kicking sound that makes you want to drink cheap cider and sniff dubious household substances. Unfortunately, Mrs. Rock and Roll, aside from being married, rides a crappy old British bike, as you can see. We now move on to this week's cover stars, which are Bon Jovi, and Jason Arnott catches up with John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora at last week's Brit Awards and gets an exclusive lowdown on the next Jovi album. Fucking unreal, man, exclaims Bon Jovi guitarist Richie Sambora, staring gleefully at some newly developed photographs of him with legendary Beatles producer George Martin. These are going straight up on the wall. Richie is in the trailer in the midst of Alexandra Palace, the London venue for this year's Brit Awards. Richie, drummer Tico Torres and Mr. Bon Jovi himself are here for two reasons. Number one, they're performing I'll Sleep When I'm Dead with British soul diva Dina Carroll at the awards ceremony tonight. Number two, John and Richie are collaborating with George Martin on a song for a tribute album to harmonica-blowing legend Larry Adler. The song in question was written by celebrated American jazz composer George Gershwin. A few hours ago, Richie filled in for John at the dress rehearsal with Dina Carroll. John is back at the hotel in the centre of the capital, sleeping off the hangover from the previous night's sake binge at a Camden Chinese restaurant. Richie can't stop enthusing about his Martin collaboration. It was a big challenge for a rock and roll player. Chord-wise, Gershwin's such a different kind of thing. I had to look back at my music theory courses from college. Some very expensive chords were needed. Ha! Eyes alive with enthusiasm, he's dressed as casually as you can imagine. In a fisherman's jumper and a backwards oriental style cap. He's got a beard to match, which he traditionally grows at the end of tours when he gets tired of talking to people. Brian May's playing with us tonight. It's amazing to play with your idols. Guys that I grew up listening to are now my friends and shit. Richie can now call Jimmy Page Pagey, no less. Yeah, but to be honest, we do get along well. He's not aloof at all. He's just one of the guys. And now you've sung with Dina Carroll. I don't know who paired us up with her, man, but it's cool. The band for this collaboration was thrown together at the 11th hour when two members of Bon Jovi bailed out. Keyboard player David Bryan's wife is currently expecting twins, while bassist Alec John Such got himself involved with some shit that he couldn't get out of. The pair were replaced by John's old buddy Aldo Nova and Meatloaf bassist Kazim Sultan. Richie laughs, "We met Kazim on the flight over here," and said, "Do you want to play bass?" It's music biz chaos at Alexandra Palace on this snowy Monday afternoon. The Brit Awards are being filmed for transmission the following night. The show hasn't been broadcast live in 5 years since a pink barnetted Sam Fox made a right pig's ear out of hosting it. You virtually need a special pass in order to breathe. Dress rehearsals are happening all over the place with photographers snapping away. Meatloaf doesn't want us under his nose, so we're going to have to be subtle, ran the briefing for one posse of clickers earlier on. Richie's well aware that he's been brought here primarily to promote the new Bon Jovi single Dry County. "But my personal reason to come over here," he qualifies, "is to kind of say thank you to the British public and industry for really making Bon Jovi still cool. Thanks for the support." Keep the Faith was a more contemporary album which sold 8 million copies worldwide but failed relatively poorly in America. Richie believes the album's mix was to blame. Describing the new Bob Clear Mountain remix of Dry County, Richie says simply, "More guitars, it's got a fuller, more colourful sound. Not too slick, but not as edgy as the album." Dry County has been hailed as one of the band's most mature moments. Should it be seen as any kind of signpost towards the new stuff? Are party rock songs right out now? Not necessarily, but what I'm going to try and do as a writer, performer and artist is grow. We won't do something totally different, make a left turn, but we will make sure we move forward. I think it's safe to say that on this next record you won't be hearing You Give Love a Bad Name. That's a different period of time for us. It's a really good song, but we're at a different point in our lives now. Motley Crue, contemporaries of Bon Jovi, have said much the same thing about their new grunge-caked album. Richie has heard a little of the new Crue stuff. Sonically, it sounded cool. It sounded powerful. But did it sound like Motley Crue? I don't know, he admits, and you really should stay true to yourself. But I do like grunge music. The new Pearl Jam album's fucking excellent. I like Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots. I'd imagine, too, that the Motley Crue album will be grunge with a heavy metal attitude. A kind of heavy grunge. John Bon Jovi admitted in the Christmas issue of Kerrang that Alec John Such had a serious alcohol problem at one point during the New Jersey tour. John even intimated that Such was at such one point close to receiving his marching orders. "Not that I know of," insists Richie. "We want to keep the same members. Al's eccentric, but not enough to get his ass kicked out of the band. That rumour was definitely misconstrued, although we really fucked up on the New Jersey tour. It was that whole syndrome. It was a period of time when we thought nothing could stop us. People would say, 'You want to play another 70 shows?' And we'd go, 'Sure.' We were unhealthy at that point and drifting apart. We had our own personal crises going on. Everybody had to watch themselves." Brian May recognised that backstage at Wembley in 89. "He took me and John to one side and told us we were working too hard. He told us that he wished he could have had some of the Queen days back because he couldn't remember most of them." Was the Keep the Faith tour completely clean? Pretty much. We didn't have any booze in the dressing room for most of the tour. Towards the end, we had some wine and stuff like that. On the New Jersey tour, I'd be drinking a bottle of whiskey a day. It was a daily thing and it seemed okay. This time, we didn't let that happen. We ain't angels, but we didn't let it affect the work end of things. Is Richie anti-hard drugs? Yes, definitely. It doesn't help you do anything. I went through my hard drug thing more or less when I was a teenager growing up in New Jersey. I dabbled with things, although not anything like crack or fucking heroin. I'm kind of like done with it now. I went for that period of time. At the moment, I'm driven by playing. Man, just living. John is totally fired up by the demos for album number 6. "You don't know exactly what to think about the first batch of demos, but I'm definitely excited by them," he beams. "The thing is, with Keep the Faith, only one of the 6 singles was in the first batch. So that goes to show you where the first batch of demos usually is. Being a family man hasn't affected my writing either. I haven't written a baby song. That's not what I should be doing. I haven't felt like sitting down and writing a song for the baby." Does John share Richie's vision of the next Bon Jovi album breaking yet more new ground for the band? "Yeah, I'd like to see that. I don't want to recreate any of the bigger hits, for example, like trying to rewrite Wanted Dead or Alive again. I don't think that would be very fulfilling. I think what Motley Crue have done with their new album is cool. God bless them and good luck. I heard the album yesterday and I think it's been well worth waiting for. They've taken some chances and not just written Shout at the Devil again. But isn't their switch indicative of the music biz climate?" John considers this for a moment. "Well, I hear things like the Doobie Brothers in the Crue album, so I don't really know if it's really this total Alice in Chains thing that everyone keeps talking about. But it's great to see bands like Rage Against the Machine and Therapy giving rock the big kick that it needed. I mean, in the same way that A&R guys sang 10 Bon Jovis and Def Leppard's at one point, they've done the same with Nirvana and Pearl Jam. Bands 7 to 10 are usually shit. It's taken time to clean the system out, and I think it's really healthy now. Will Bon Jovi be drawing off that new metal energy? The energy in the performances, yes. Not the lyrics, though. I'm obviously coming from a different place. Personally, I can't really say that was the most exciting interview I've ever read. And I think this goes back to what has been discussed on this podcast before about how Kerrang have to balance who they put on the cover and the content that they put in the article. And obviously, for this week, putting Bon Jovi on the cover in 94 is going to shift a lot of copies. Whether the actual content and the interview in the magazine is warranted, I don't think it matters so much. I think it's obviously a difficult thing, and they had to gauge and weigh up what they were doing with trying to make sales, but also trying to produce quality content. I don't think they produced quality content at that time, but bless them for trying.
Basically, we're heavy metal, aren't we?
We made a record that was so heavy you couldn't get off the turntable.
Records now, and the first record reviewed this week is Super Unknown by Soundgarden. The review is by Don K, and it gets 5 Ks. Every week, I have a new favourite song from Soundgarden's phenomenal fourth album, Super Unknown. This week, it's 4th of July, while last week it was Black Hole Sun. Before that came Head Down, and The Day I Tried to Live. There's more to come for sure. What's amazing is that every one of those songs has its own unique identity, yet each is recognisably the work of a band whose creative powers are operating at their fullest. Super Unknown is an album of depth and diversity, a work that brims with fresh ideas, new directions, stylistic swings and focused songcraft. It casts a wide net and comes up with a full catch, all the while avoiding easy labels and quick definition. 1991's Bad Motorfinger was one of the great heavy rock records of the last 5 years, and comparisons with the new one are inevitable. But there's little to compare. Soundgarden have wisely avoided repeating themselves, bravely branching into new territory instead. The results are electrifying. Opener Let Me Drown is the most typical Soundgarden stomp, bluesy and grungy yet with an undeniable groove. My Wave bristles with attitude and aggression, a separatist narrator inviting others to keep away from My Wave, before sliding into a funky bass-driven finish. Then comes the first hint that we really are heading into the super unknown. Fell on Black Days is a stark, elegantly somber descent into despair. Its simple grey guitar lines accentuating the barely restrained vocals. It's got a dark sheen all on its own. It's impossible to analyse all 15 songs in detail. The album clocks in at a weighty 70 minutes, but let's see how far we can go. Mailman is a drug blues crawl which leads to the soaring kaleidoscopic title track, a metaphysical odyssey propelled by sheets of cascading riffs. Then comes the winning pair that stops the show. Head Down is a psychedelic ethereal trip with otherworldly vocals from Chris Cornell and a shimmering refrain. Written by bassist Ben Shepherd, it's unlike anything the band have ever attempted. That's followed by Black Hole Sun, a smash if ever I heard one. Beatles-esque in all the right places and with more of that hallucinatory feel that the band captures so effortlessly. Onward with the Tribal Spoon Man, featuring an actual spoon player amidst its jungle drumming and a serpentine riff. Limerick is a slow burner in the tradition of New Damage that leads to another highlight, The Day I Tried to Live. With this one's looping infectious chorus and descending riff, Soundgarden used light and dark shades to remarkable effect. Of the album's last third favourites are the haunting ghostly 4th of July with its zombie-like scraping guitars and mournful chant, and Like Suicide, which builds quietly to a frenetic wash of axe work. Guitarist Cornell and Kintyre attempt something new on nearly every track and largely succeed. My one small quibble is that the guitars seem a little too low in the mix on occasion. Aside from that, the performances are sparkling. Matt Cameron refuses to stay put as he interweaves all kinds of rhythms into his hard-hitting drumming, while Ben Shepherd provides a thick bass bottom end. And Chris Cornell confirms that he's the greatest rock vocalist around now. He does it all, from skimming the lowest reaches of his soul to scaling the heights of the upper atmosphere. The production by Michael Beanhorn polishes a few of the raw edges a little too smoothly, but I can't hold back the strength of the material. Sure, fans expecting another bombastic heavy metal grunge fest may be disappointed, but if you want an album full of surprises, sterling performances and the sound of a band stretching itself to its full potential, then Super Unknown may well be your album of the year. Super Unknown is released on March the 7th. The next review is by a band called AC. Now, we all know that AC stands for Anal Cunt, and the album is called Everyone Should Be Killed on Earache, and it gets 4Ks. And the review begins, 4Ks, if you can somehow get it for free, otherwise it's bollocks. The initials stand for something very rude indeed. The first word is anal and the second rhymes with runt. We probably couldn't print the whole thing. That's how saucy it is. Everyone Should Be Killed is one of those albums which really should be given away free on street corners. It brightened the world right up with its 58 tracks of sheer screaming grindcore. Lasting a total of 58 minutes, yes, it's Napalm Death's Scum LP all over again, but this time it's a hot piss take on the entire genre. It works very well either as a comedy record or the classic blast with which to annihilate your most unfavourite neighbours. There are some classic song titles like Grindcore is Very Terrifying, Brutally Morbid Acts of Satan, and I'm Not Allowed to Like Anal Cunt Anymore Since They Signed to Earache. There are also signs of Judas Priest's mockery with tracks like Les Binks Hairstyle, and the one which suddenly plays the Breaking the Law riff before blasting off again. You really need to get this album without paying for it, however. So the first person to write to me with a fictional band name even more offensive than AC's gets a copy. Skill. This next review is the self-titled album by the Screaming Cheetah Wheelies, and this gets 5Ks. Picture Lynyrd Skynyrd on amphetamines. Round sound waves are back, and no one employs them with so much inventiveness and unbridled enthusiasm as the Screaming Cheetah Wheelies. Well, maybe the Wild Hearts, but they're the only close contenders. When the Wheelies jam on something else, it feels like they're really improvising, like their entire hearts and souls are in it. They seem just happy to be a bar band, just happy to rock out and end in with the cheesoid big power chord finish. They make it work. This is a band that understands that everything old is new again, embracing blues, country, funk, especially on Leave Your Pride and good old rock and roll, plus every crowd pleaser mechanism known to humankind. Harmonicas, choruses where backup singers punctuate Mike Farris's throaty vocals with woo woo on Ride the Tide, and do so exuberantly and without apology. Listen to Shaking the Blues and see if you can keep from tapping your feet. Cannot be done. Metal charts now, and the number one album this week is Trouble Gun by Therapy. The number one indie metal album is Chaos AD by Sepultura. Number one video is So Far So Good. And back at the top of the pile is our old mate Meatloaf. Number one in the singles with Rock and Roll Dreams Come Through. The readers chart this week is by Deborah Priestley from Blackpool. And she says she's been buying the mighty mag that is the Big Kerrang since its very inception. Blimey. Well, in that case, how can we not print her rather rocktabulous readers chart? Deb says of her chart, if all these tracks were played back to back in a club, by number 10, you'd be dead from dancing. Ain't she right enough? Love Destruction by Warrior Soul, number one. Number two, Room 1,000 Years Wide, Soundgarden. Number three, I Am Hell, White Zombie. Number four, Suck My Kiss, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Number five, Pigs in Zen, Jane's Addiction. Number six, Just One Fix, Ministry. Number seven, Sex by Shotgun Messiah. Number eight, Bread Fan, Metallica. Number nine, Rape Me, Nirvana. Hang on. Songs you can dance to in a club, Rape Me, Nirvana. Yeah, okay. Number 10, There You Go, Goo Goo Dolls. Kerrang Classifieds now, and under Musicians Wanted, we have Serious Power Metal Band, Good Prospects, Urgently Require Vocalist, Front Person with Power, High Range, Image Essential, Chris, 0252-513-106. Before 10 p.m, please. Lunatic Required. If you are a vocalist, lyricist, influences ranging from hip-hop, grunge and thrash, we need you. Send your demo biography to 5 Alarm Panic, care of 47 Windrush, Ruscott Estate, Banbury, Oxon, OX16, 7PL. Under special notices, we have Leslie and Tracy, the Toxic Twins, happy 18th birthday, love, Craig. And under personal this week, we have James Hetfield, though thousands of miles apart, a million kisses from my heart. Happy Valentine, James. James. Love, Jilly. Kiss, 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 kiss. 14th of the 2nd, 94. Tucked away towards the back of this issue of Kerrang is a very sad piece. This is the last interview with the three remaining members of Wolfsbane, and Kerrang begins. Brit Metal Hooligans Wolfsbane are splitting up now that Iron Maiden have stolen singer Blaze Bailey. In Kerrang's final Wolfsbane interview, Wolfie's Jace, Jeff and Steve reveal the hard truth of the split to Razel. Of late, the hottest gossip in rock currently singeing lips and aerobicising tongues is that big bad Iron Maiden, Boo Hiss, have snatched their new frontman Blaze Bailey from everybody's favourite scuzz buckets, Wolfsbane. So where does that leave remaining Wolfies Jace Edwards, Jeff Hatley and young Steve Danger? Their new album and the 1,580 fully paid up members of their infamous Howling Mad Shitheads fan club. That's why I'm round the corner of the old Prang local with the lads, the band, naturally not the fan club, to discover. So is Blaze Bailey really a porky pie peddling copulent illegitimate personage, or in layman's terms, a lying fat bastard? I think that speaks for itself, doesn't it really, offers Jace, with something of an ironic grin tugging at his mouth. How was the news of Blaze's departure passed on to you? Jace, I just got a phone call from my manager early one morning, and we were in the middle of doing a few gigs, to say Blaze Bailey was now the singer of Iron Maiden. This was 4 days before Christmas, and that was it. Merry Christmas. Yeah, it's Jeff, batting a sneer. Have a mince pie and get down the job centre, mate. It turns out that since then, only Danger has seen Blaze in person. He took me out for a beer, reveals the unusually subdued Sticksman, and he paid. I should bloody hope he did, snorts Jeff, before turning to question Steve. So what's your opinion on this, Steve? You're the only one who actually hung out with Blaze Bailey. One sniffed sarcasm in the air. It's a bit hard to comment, says Danger, eyeing his pint and talking into his chest, because I think he made the right move for himself. Jeff, of course he made the right move. No one's denying it. But what's your opinion of the manner in which it was done? Danger, I don't think he had any choice, because if it came up to us and said, look lads, there's a chance I could join Iron Maiden. Well, exactly, snaps Jeff. It would have been over anyway. Has Blaze even phoned you or anything? Jeff, he phoned me up and was kind of grovelling a bit. He was like, oh, sorry, mate. And I said, I don't really want to talk to you just now. Not that I hate him or anything. I just don't think I could talk to him at the moment. How about you, Jace? Not a sausage. Could you have called him? Jace, if I'd wanted to, yeah, but what's the point? It's happened, so I really don't have anything to say to him, to be honest. Jeff, I just feel like a mug. I wish if he'd joined another band, he could have at least found someone a bit cooler, but he cracks, trailing off with a laugh. Jace, it was just the basic idea that he said he wasn't interested in Maiden. Well, he must have been up there auditioning. I just thought he owed it to us, to be honest. That's what I'd have expected from him. But how sneakily he went about it, it made me think I never knew him anyway. That's why I've nothing to say to him, because he could be somebody you just pass in the street. Yet Blaze was the hotly tipped favourite to replace Bruce Dickinson. Surely you must have suspected something from Blaze's behaviour. Jace, if I hadn't trusted him, then in retrospect I would have suspected that he was going to leave. But I did trust him. Jeff, it was the antithesis of everything we were supposed to be about. It makes Wolfsbane seem like any other band. I mean, anyone with a bit of sense could see that we weren't about to become millionaires, and we all knew that. We're not stupid. So something comes up and a band member wants to do it, then go for it. But what is bad is that he was hedging his bets. It was like, if I tell him, they'll probably sack me anyway. So if I don't tell him and I don't get it, nothing changes. Okay, Jeff, if you were offered a position in a major band, how would you handle it? I don't know, he shrugs. I don't know how I'd react to this situation because I've never been in it. Maybe Blaze hates himself. No, he doesn't hate himself, flinches Jeff at the suggestion. How do you know? Jeff, because I know him. I know him well enough to know he'll come up with something to justify everything he's done. Danger. I actually don't think there's any way he could have handled it better than he did. Maybe Blaze could have sat down and told you all first. What? Exclaims Danger, in the middle of recording an album. I'd rather not recorded the album, to be honest, Jace concedes, and gone out on massive noise injection. Danger, but we had the songs and we wanted them down. Yeah, but we could have ripped them to bits and kept the riffs for ourselves, returns Jace, with Jeff in full agreement. Right, if I knew what was going to happen, I would have kept half the stuff I wrote for the next band. I take it then that you don't plan on sticking together with a new frontman. Jeff, I hate it when bands change an integral person. Blaze Bailey was a major part of Wolfsbane and that's it. And without a major part, what's the point in carrying on? I want to either form or join a band. I want to meet like-minded people who want to do ultimate 90s garage rock and roll. What else can be done now but go straight back to basics? Although none of us have had any offers forthcoming, mentions Jace. Maybe we're all probably a bit too Wolfsbane for him. Probably, yeah, but I don't want to do something just because I'm not doing anything. I'm only 24. I don't feel like I'm in a massive rush. I'd rather just chill out a bit. What do you predict of Blaze in Maiden? Jeff, he'll probably do quite well. Of all of us, he was the only one with trad metal leanings. At least I hope he does well, because it'll be embarrassing if he doesn't. Otherwise, it'll be, oh, Wolfsbane, nothing good came out of them. So in a way, I hope when they come back, they've dropped Eddie, the Maiden mascot, and got a new logo, and Blaze has had some input. Jace, in the short term, there's absolutely no downside to getting Blaze in Maiden. Everybody's going to buy that first album to see what they've come up with. Thus, sadly, we wind up the saga of Wolfsbane, a Kerrang legend. They will be missed, and of course I could gush their praises and cry a tear in a beer, but it seemed more fitting to let Jeff etch their epitaph. For all our thoughts At least we were the real thing for the right reasons. I think Wolfsbane were a one-off in our generation of bands. Amen. Well, on that hefty bombshell, the next issue of Kerrang! Next week will be Pantera, Beyond Hostile, The Making of Curb Dog, Drinking with Motley Crue, plus Ozzy, Therapy, Raging Slab, David Lee Roth, Nine Inch Nails, and Alice in Chains. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us a message at KerrangPod, or you can send us an email at KerrangBackIssues@gmail.com. I think I mentioned it the other week, but if you fancy leaving a review on iTunes, is it on iTunes, Apple Music, whatever it is, that's really good. Bumps us up the charts. That's lovely. If you don't want to, that's fine. Not a problem. As always, we'll be back next Wednesday and every Wednesday. So, yeah, talk to you soon and have a good week. Cheers. Bye.